This is a Collider.com audio interview.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Good morning.
How you doing today? Frosty?
Third day, huh?
Is it third? Is that all?
No, it's third.
Third and a half.
That's fine.
Yeah.
Not counting Australia.
So I'm just going to jump in. How involved were either of you or both of you in these straight-to-DVD ventures?
The Black Freighter was... We were pretty involved in the Black Freighter. The Eric basically spearheaded the Under the Hood mock documentary. Have you seen that?
No. We haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's well, he was like, he got, you know, because he was doing the EPKs and all the behind-the-scenes stuff, and so they just decided, you know, he just started... He put together this proposal that we could do Under the Hood as a... It's basically a TV show that called The Culpepper Minute, which is a complete, like, sort of magazine show from the... started in the 70s, I guess, apparently. And when the book came out, the original book, Under the Hood, first came out, they did a story on it. And this is supposedly a follow-up story, you know, to their original story. Like, where are they now kind of thing. And they interview all the casting character that they can. I think the comedian's like, get that fucking camera out of my face. You know, like when they find him at like his you know, outside of his apartment building. You know, but it's like that, you know, so it's pretty cool.
Can you talk about making these more than just straight to video spin-offs and actually authentically Watchmen?
Well, I mean, I think the way it's especially that piece is because it gave them, they have access to all the cast. All the cast basically had done a ton of research about, because they had to ad lib the dialogue, right? Because it's interview. And so they, Carla, you know, did an amazing job because they have the original interview, you know, of her, I think in, I forget what year the book was released, in 72 or maybe something like that.
Yeah.
So they have that interview with her, you know, so she's like in her sort of the early 70s look. And she just had done all her research, so she had it, so she could kind of, you know, talk about the rape allegation or like the whole, you know, like it's pretty interesting. And then Stephen McCaddy, of course, they interview him, like they're in the Gunga Diner doing the interview. That's where the interviews take place. And it's just, I just feel like, you know, after so much work that these actors had put into researching their roles, they were actually able to pay off that research with like these sort of ad lib experience, which is really kind of, it was cool. It's cool for me to see, actually, because I, you know, being sort of separate from that, you know, like they would say, we'd be shooting a scene and they'd say, hey, can we have Carla? Because we're going to do a interview for Under the Hood. And I'd say, okay. You know, and I'm like, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, you know, I talked to Eric about it, so it wasn't like, you know, crazy, but it was interesting. Now, but when it comes to, and then they also shot all this historical footage. With, you know, like, they'd take Hooded Justice, and they get a Bolex, and they'd, like, go down some alley, and, like, you know, with some vintage cops, and they'd shoot some, like, handheld, scratchy footage of him, like, arresting someone. Or making love to someone. No, we didn't see that. It's possible. But when it came to the Black Freighter, there was a much different deal, because the Black Freighter started off, you know, because there was this idea that they were going to do this parallel content that they were going to release at time of release, trying, you know, because it's huge marketing, right? Like, we have this giant marketing machine, and you know, Warner Premier's like, look, you know, we need to, it'd be awesome if we could release some supplemental material at time of release, because it's great to take advantage of that marketing. So it seemed to me, I was like, I got to say, I had slight ulterior motives because I knew there was no way the studio was ever going to fund a Black Freighter movie to be included in the, you know, just for the DVD or whatever. It just didn't seem possible. But Warner Premier, of course, came to the rescue of that sort of conceptually for me. And I don't want to say that it was a subversive act by me, or that there was that I did anything that nobody that there was with dark motives. Although slightly dark, because I knew that that was a way for me to cheat them into giving me my Black Raider movie that I could edit in. And then we got some money from Warner Premiere so I could shoot the ins and outs with, you know, because we had to add a couple days to the schedule so I could actually get all that, the Bernie's stuff shot, so that I would end up with a way to get the Black Raider into the movie and still have sort of the Bernie's story makes sense at the end too.
So the Bernie stuff is not in this release. That's just
for
the extent.
Yeah, it's just for the extent. It's not even really in the director's cut either. It's actually just for the Black Raider version.
How was it with your time? Because it seems like there's so many projects going on at the same time. There's Watchmen, and then at about the same time, it's the Black Freighter, and then
it was hard to do. I mean, Alex wrote the script, and then I worked on it a bit, and you know, it wasn't terribly difficult to write the script. It was basically slightly modified from the original Black Freighter story, but it's, you know, just because. It's another thing where there's just missing elements to it, so we had to fill it in a little bit to make it just make it all the way, go all the way. And then, you know, we hired an animation director, and he, you know, and Real Effects did the movie, but you know, we worked really pretty closely with him. I think that that became a lot more of involved than I thought it was going to be. Just working on the actual animated film, you know.
I have to say that all this is pretty much news to me, but it's really good to hear, you know, that there are the same elements attached to the movie as there were in the comic book, because not everybody used to read the text features at the back, but if you do, it really enriches the experience of reading the comic book, and from what Zach's saying, that's going to be the case with this. And I've only seen the trailer of the Black Freighter stuff, and it's not in the kind of EC horror comic style that I did, but it does look scary. It does look terrifying.
It is scary.
Which it should be. So I'm really looking forward to seeing it as much as you guys.
What you've seen so far, are you pleased with the tone and the sweep of it?
Of the Black Freighter stuff, as I say, it's only the short trailer. But again, I noticed a few of my panel compositions have crept in there, you know.
Yeah.
And I do like the kind of gaudy horror of it all. It seems to have captured that.
And also, you know, there was the idea of doing just like cell animation, you know, for this thing. It was kind of an interesting thing. You know, we had to do it in Korea because that's where they do cell animation now. You know, it's difficult to do here, you know, so it was really interesting, just because I think originally we said, oh, you know, someone said like, oh, we should go and do like find a 3D studio, you know, because that's the kind of animation there is now. And we were like, yeah, that doesn't really make sense, you know, it should look a little bit like a Saturday morning cartoon, a teeny bit, you know. You know, in that kind of, you know, it's almost like, don't make it too modern, you know. That was that's the aesthetic sort of problem that we face, is you can't make it too modern, or it like would not make sense, you know. So
how much Dave Gibbons and how much Joe Orlando is there in the final animation?
I think there's a lot, to be honest, because I think that I mean, look, the truth, they had to redraw everything, but I think that the compositions and sort of the tone, and definitely, you know, look, the design is you know, all from the book.
Dave, the joke of the Black Freighter is that it's a world of superheroes, they don't superhero comics, but it's still all one kind of comic. Everybody reads pirate comics all the time. And that sort of, 20 years later, we sort of have that same thing in the world still. It's still all superhero comics. I mean, sort of from your position, why do you think that the comic market is so still obsessed with the superhero?
God, I suppose it's because it's something that's very well suited to comic books. I mean, the reason superheroes have brightly coloured costumes and capes is because, you know, in the early days of colour printing, they could only print those crude, you know, red, yellow and blue. So that's why Superman is red, yellow and blue. And then they have capes so that suggests motion as they move. It's like speed lines. And I guess, you know, they're kind of, you can tell any kind of story with a superhero and you can ramp it up and make it epic. I really wish there was more of a variety of comics. You know, I mean, when I was growing up reading British comics, we didn't really have superheroes. If they had people with strange powers, they were always kind of supernatural, creepy powers rather than muscle powers. And we used to have, you know, sports comics and war comics and pirate comics and everything like that. It's really strange that America, and even after Alan and I and Frank Miller tried to, you know, point out the flaws with superheroes, right, they still seem to be, you know, they still seem to be very popular. I love a good superhero comic myself, but I like other kinds of comics as well.
Right. Seems like they love them even more now.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, look, they're broken. Right.
And I suppose, in a way, the gods are coming down to earth a bit. You know, yeah, whereas they were always up there, now we can perhaps identify with their problems a bit more. You know?
The complete motion comic release is 6.5 hours long. Does that mean the movie could have been twice as long?
That's what I mean. That's basically. If you watch it, if we shot it panel for panel, that's what it would have probably been. 6.5 hours. And that's not taking into account, you know, dramatic pauses by actors doing dialogue or whatever, you know, which they tend to do, you know. So I think that at least 6.5 hours long.
Does the motion comic version have the original ending from the book? Or
No, it's exactly the book. It's just the book.
And that does have nearly every line and nearly every scene, and that does come in at around about 6 hours, perhaps a bit less. So that is the actual running time of a literal translation of Watchmen, yeah.
Yeah.
What's your guys' take on this motion comic? I'm just curious when you heard about it, what was your thing?
You know, they came and pitched it to me first, and they showed me this thing, and they said, okay, look, we're this, what was that guy's name? I forget the guy's name. Anyway, he came and pitched it to us at my office, and I said, that's cool. That's, you know, he had taken like months off work and just made this thing. You know, he's like, look, I made this thing. I quit my job, and now I made, like, I love Watchmen.
Like,
I guess you do. Yeah, my kids are starving. What do you think? Yeah. So I don't know. We felt like it could be cool. I mean, look, for me, I just felt like it was an opportunity to sort of, you know, it's like a middle ground. I don't, like, it's not a comic book, but it's not a movie. It's like a way in this, like, sort of iPod-obsessed world to get people to be able to sit on an airplane or wherever they are, mm-hmm, and, you know, put on their headphones. And that's why I didn't want, you know, because originally they said, oh, we'll do voices for each character, we'll do sound effect, you know, we'll make it more like a movie. And that I wasn't into. Mm-hmm. I kind of felt like, for me, and then I'll let you talk about it, because you actually, he had a big influence on it as well. You know, it was to try and push it back more toward being like the comic and less like a movie, because I felt like when it tried to be a movie, it fell kind of short and weird. You know what I mean? It felt like a bad animation. Mm. Which is what we didn't want it to be. So,
well, when I was first shown it, and Paul Levitz of DC showed it to me to see what I thought about it, and my first reaction was, this is to paraphrase a famous quotation about women in politics, actually, it's that, not that whether it's done well or badly, it's just the fact that it was done at all, a bit like a dog riding a bike, you know, it's singular, no matter how well the dog rides the bike, if I'm not being too abstruse. So I thought, well, I don't think we really need this. And I said to Paul, if I really don't like it, is it likely to get made anyway? And he said, probably. So I said, well, okay then. So I went away to think about it, and I showed what I had of it to friends of mine in the comic business, animation, computer games, and they felt like me, it's not really necessary, and it's done quite well, it could be done a bit better. So it was umming and ahhing. I showed it to my teenage stepdaughters, and they went crazy. They said, this is great, this is fantastic, can we see some more of it? So I realised then that it would get to an audience that wasn't me and wasn't my friends in the business, but it was an audience that had grown up, as Zach says, on iPods and visual delivery of stuff that moved.
Yeah.
So I kind of changed my mind about it, really just on their enthusiasm. And certainly I was involved in it as a consultant, so I kind of went through the script with them, and they'd show me the animatic and the rough animation. And in the end, I think it's turned out really well. It's a strange job to do, because actually the better they do their job, the less you notice their job. You know, it's a tremendous feat of cutting all the foregrounds out and extending the backgrounds and resizing it. But on an iPod, it looks brilliant. And the reason why, I think, is because the panels are kind of exactly the same size as in the comic book.
Yeah,
so it's like isolating a panel and watching it move. I think, you know, and it kind of works as an audiobook with just one voice. It must have been a funny day in the audio booth the day that he made love to himself, you know. That aside, I think...
That's what it is to be an actor.
And I do think it's a prototype of possibly a new form of entertainment. I can see there is something kind of struggling to be born, or we're kind of trying to find something there in the fog that
because you can't make a book on tape of a comic book. It's just... Right. You can't do it. It's just like, it would make no sense, you know. You just hear... Someone would have to describe the panels. It would like be crazy.
Yeah.
Have you followed how many people have downloaded it first on iTunes? Or
I don't know.
I think it's doing well.
I think it's doing really well, actually.
Dave, has it made you want to maybe do something original in that format to try to kind of...
Well, it is interesting because, I mean, what I'm all about is telling stories in pictures. And, of course, with home computers nowadays, it's quite easy to draw it so that you've already got the foreground separated from the background, for instance. So you can have it in print, but then you've got all the elements and assets you need to animate it. And I think if you did it with that in mind from the beginning, that you could do something quite interesting. So, you know, when the circus is over, I might have a think about that.
Pull our stakes up and get out.
Yeah.
Did DC give you an idea that that's a direction that they might be looking at?
I think they're very interested in it. I mean, they've got such huge vaults full of comic strip material. I do know that they're doing, and I think this is public knowledge. If not, then I've completely blown it.
Let me write that down.
They're going to do Mad Love, you know, which is that fantastic Bruce Timm drawn thing, which is in kind of an animated style anyway, which I reckon will transfer very well. And they're also doing a Batman black and white story that I did, which again, you know, I'm just really interested to see what happens. I don't think we're going to get it right immediately, but I think there's something there that's worth playing with.
Yeah. Zach, in the Ultimate Edition, when the Black Freighter is put back in, how's it going to be integrated? Because in the comic, it isn't just always showing panels, it's narration from the book over scenes that comment on.
Well, yeah, Zach, you know, it does that a little bit, not as much as I would have liked, to be honest, but because we have most of it's bookended by the Bernies,
right.
It tends to be a little bit more... I mean, I feel like it does kind of flow and go in and out in kind of a nice way. And we did a lot. We did these things where, you know, when the kid's looking at the comic book, you know, we do these things where we drive into a frame and then it starts to animate. So there's cool stuff like that. But, it didn't quite as much as I'd wanted to, like, be, you know, either Rorschach's voiceover over a picture from you know, Black Freighter, or hearing the, you know, Jerry talking over the, you know, it does it a little bit, but I think it could have been a little bit more. But it's just, you know, it's one of those things that, you know, when you're designing the movie and you're kind of sneaking this thing into it, it's a little bit difficult to engineer these scenes for the film that can kind of do both. You know, it's one's going to compromise the other in some ways.
How much of it is narration with Bernie, and how much of it is the relationship that he grows with the newsstand kid?
It's mostly that. It's he and the newsstand kid, I'd say, more than anything. You know, that's kind of, you know, the top knots are there, knocking around, getting mad, and they don't like, you know, that he's reading the comic book, and they, you know, there's this, you know, we did a, you know, something, little bits like where, even though it's maybe not in the comic book, where Hollis Mason is buying a magazine, just try to bring characters sort of from the outside world sort of pass through the newsstand, you know, to make it feel like a community of characters, you know, that kind of, and also kind of interesting maybe and fun that they get this, you know, an audience would get an opportunity to kind of expand the world and feel like that it's living and breathing, even more than just straight linear movie would do, you know. Like, because I think when you're in the movie, we really don't have a lot of time to fuck around, you know. It's pretty much, you've got to stay on point and you got to, you know, keep going because, you know, time is so critical. And so, you know, it's kind of fun to have the Black Freighter version where you really, it is pretty luxurious. It kind of, you know.
Will we see 100% of what's on the DVD in the Ultimate Edition, or will it be a truncated version that gets squeezed into the movie?
I'm sorry.
Everything we see on the DVD of the Black Freighter, will that...
Oh, no, yeah, that's all in.
It's all in.
It's all in.
Last question.
How involved were you in the creation of the video game? Do you feel like the video game format is the same reference as the
video
other
game?
Materials?
Like the video game was, you know, the video game was kind of fits and starts a little bit. Like they came to me and showed me like, oh look, here's our script for the video game, and I looked at it and I was like, really? This feels like a Saturday morning cartoon. Like they just were on like a mission. You know, it was Rorschach and Night Owl, and they just did something. They found some little references, but I go, you know, it's just not. I go, it just misses the point a little bit, doesn't it? If we're going to do this, we should try and think of something a little bit, I don't know, something a little darker. You know, because I remember, like, long, long ago, because we had talked even, you know, and they just didn't get it together. But I was like, long, long ago, we were talking about, like, oh, is there a video game possibility? And I said, well, you guys have 2.5 years, 3 years, you can make a real game. So, and I go, the problem is, no one's going to, are you guys prepared to make a game where, you know, you're the comedian and you go and kill some political leader, you know, like, is that going to be a good, cool, I mean, are you guys, you, Warner Brothers, willing to make that game? And they're like, you know, and I said, well, and I go, like, unless that's the game has to subvert. If you can make a game that subverts, like, the video game world totally in storyline, then maybe you can make an interesting game. And they just hemmed and hawed. And I was like, okay, otherwise, you know, I really don't have a lot of time for the game. Then they came back and they were like, well, we're doing a game. It was kind of like the motion comic
experience. It's going to be done anyway.
And I said, okay, well, I'll try and help you guys make a goal. And they did, you know, in the end, I think they came around and said, like, okay, well, tell us what would be cool then. You know, so, you know, we tried to create a cool script. And I think the game's kind of fun. Look, to me, the game is it was done in Amsterdam, I think, by this pretty cool group, and they've done a pretty good job with the Sims and kind of, you know, the world feels pretty interesting and kind of fun. I played a little bit of it, but I haven't played the whole thing. So, I don't know. It seems interesting. But
there is a precedent to it, actually, because back when the comic came out, Mayfair Games did a role-playing module.
Yeah.
Actually, Alan was very, very involved in. And this video game is kind of the same setting as that. It's before the bad things happened, and Night Owl and Rorschach are still a team. So there is a precedent for it. I've only been kind of marginally involved in it with this sort of cutscenes, but it's an interesting thing to see, and I mean, as with, you know, state-of-the-art video games today, the graphics just absolutely fantastic.
Yeah,
you know,
sort of as a quick follow-up to that, what is sort of your take on the entire merchandising of Watchmen based on the movie at this point? Because, I mean, I know that journalists, I don't know if this is being on sale, journalists got Dr. Manhattan condoms. I mean, it's sort of...
I'm sort of curious
what your take
is
on
it. Is there a risk of it being too much, all the products?
I don't think condoms would be...
No,
that's just me.
I mean, I think in the real world, there is merchandising. I think people want merchandising. Nearly everything I've seen is of a very good quality, or like the condom is very witty, you know, which makes me smile. There's one thing I'm not quite in love with, and that's the Halloween costumes, which probably I'd rather have a trash can liner and a Sharpie and make my own. It'd probably look better, actually. Anyway, but that's my only criticism. But the figures and the replicas are just, I mean, I've told DC I want two of everything, and I'm off to IKEA when I get back and buying a couple of glass display cases, and I'm going to enjoy them.
That's cool.
Because
where were we? When we were at the Apple Store doing the Apple Store thing, it was the first time I've actually seen a kid came up to me with the Rorschach in the box, and I was like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, nice. They're very
nice.
Can I
have
that? Ask for two of everything.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, that's what I'm talking about.
Devin Shred.